Welcome back to Real Talk, everybody. I am so excited today. I am speaking with David Ibarra, leadership consultant, professional speaker, author from Utah. And we're going to be talking a little bit about manifestation today and what that means for life and business and the whole general scheme of things. And David's got a really interesting story. So let's just get right into it. Hi, David. How are you?
Good, Jenny. And thank you so much for inviting me today.
I'm so happy to have you. I've read a little bit about your story, and it's really, really inspiring. And we are going to talk about manifestation. But before we get into that, you have a great story, and your biography sort of alludes to coming from some humble beginnings. And I wonder if you could tell our audience a little bit about how you started, where you're from, a little bit of a background story on you.
Well, perfect. I'm the son of a Mexican Zapotec Indian migrant worker who came from Oaxaca to work in the fields of Utah. And he married a young white Mormon girl, 16 years old. And, you know, in Utah, that was probably not the thing to do. The mixing of colors was just not welcome in Utah. And they experienced some hard times and divorced early. And my dad had registered for the draft while he was here and got drafted. And off to Germany he goes during the Korean crisis. And my mother just couldn't handle the responsibility of raising and continuing to take the backlash of having two Mexican kids. And so she... we had a very non-traditional childhood. She dropped us off at the Utah foster care system. And I was one. My brother Mickey was two, and left us and frankly didn't come back. And so, you know, you start life off, you don't get to choose. You know, my first lesson from all of this was learning really, you know, how am I going to get through it? How am I going to experience or get past the feelings of not mattering. You know, I didn't feel like I mattered. I didn't feel like I belonged. And I certainly didn't feel like success was meant for me. But I knew one thing, and my father, when he visited, would tell us that, you know, we didn't get to choose this. And before he left, he'd put us both on his knee and he'd tell us a story. Hey, this is what it is. It's not going to change. Mickey, you're responsible for David, and watch out for him. Make sure he's safe. Feels like he matters, and we're going to get through it. And so the first, you know, thought in my mind or vision in my mind was one day I'm going to get through this. And one day it's going to be different. One day I'm going to see happiness. One day I'm going to be included. And when you do that and seed your subconscious, even though I didn't know what I was doing, but seeding your subconscious that it's going to be better and I can get through it and I have no choice, you get through it.
Yeah. And that's an interesting point of having that thought process of one day. So at that time, did you feel like this was an inconquerable thing? Did you feel like you weren't sure if you were going to get through your current circumstances? Well, and
you know, it was interesting. My brother was very light and he didn't experience the same things as I did. And, you know, I got called the you know, every name connected with, you know, being brown. And, you know, we can have a great debate about what America's like, but, you know, America isn't so kind to some of us from a brown a background. But, you know, one thing I really believed in is the what America could be. And, you know, when we looked at early on in studying the, you know, Bill of Rights or the Constitution, I recognized earlier as a youngster that America was not that. That was the affirmation of what America could be. Right. And that it was our journey to one day to arrive at this place where we, the people, we all mattered, you know, that we all had this right for happiness. We all were going to be, well, some would say that's laughable because it's not true, but it is our dream. And as long as we're on the journey, well, wow, how powerful is that? So for me, I had a hard time. There's no doubt. And there is no doubt that I drifted into being angry. I got into a lot of trouble. At age 14, I was able to get out of foster care. I hated it. I didn't like it. I did not want to live in Utah. And I was able at 14 to leave, rejoin my father in Sacramento. And boy, what a change that was, because in Sacramento, everybody looked like me.
Right. It's
like instantly I fit in. And, and some other experiences helped me work through, changing some things in my thought pattern. And I came back to Utah, and I love Utah.
You do.
It's all good.
Yeah. So you had a sense of perseverance from a young age.
Mm-hmm.
But how was that transition for you coming from foster care and then reconnecting with your dad? It's going from a sense of not feeling accepted to being fully accepted, that transition. I know I just listened to a podcast from Yoni Park, which is a young lady who escaped from North Korea. And she, on a different scale, she talks about the transition from having no choices in her life to having moved to America, where she had every choice available to her, and how that was really hard to process. She almost felt like, it was a little scary. And I wonder if you experienced that same thing, because you had this sort of outlining of what America could be, right? It was sort of a script of hope, right? So not your experience is not necessarily what it was, but what it could be.
Well, there's no doubt, for me, 14 to 18, I was, I wasn't a good student. I got in a lot of trouble. We lived in a very challenged part of the city, and many people wouldn't go to the section of the city that I lived. It was rough and tough. At 18, I went on my own, and I decided, look, I got to do something, because I don't have any idea as to where I'm going, other than I know I'm going in the wrong direction. I'm going to get in trouble, because I'm already in trouble. Mm-hmm. I'm in trouble a lot. Mm-hmm. And I decided, they had this novel idea in Sacramento that we talk about today, free junior college for everyone. Thank heavens, it was there. All I had to do was come up with the cost of books, and I enrolled 5 classes. I was a bank teller at Wells Fargo Bank on a program that had been developed for folks of my income bracket and to assist. And I was taking 5 classes, but I was lacking $200 to pay my rent, and I needed to get a job. Another job. And I thought, at that end of the day, I'm tired. I'm brain dead. I need to be alone. So I found the perfect job, a job as a dishwasher at Farrell's Ice Cream Parlor restaurant in Sacramento. Now, I thought that was going to be the most insignificant job I would ever have.
Right.
And as it turns out, that single decision would change my life forever, forever.
Talk about that a little bit. What was that moment when you realized that this is bigger than I thought it would be?
2 weeks into it, in walks the owner, who had 25 at the time, and his job was to visit Farrell's and to make sure that it was run according to the way that he had developed it, and the theme was being executed, so each guest left with the feeling that he intended. And he walked up to me and said, "Young man, I'm Robert E. Farrell, and you have the most important job of anybody in this restaurant." I thought to myself, man, I'm the dishwasher. Who are you trying to, okay. And so I'm smiling. Okay, thank you, sir. He stuck out his hand to shake mine, and mine's full of food. And he stuck his hand, he left it. I said, okay, you want some? I'll share.
Yeah.
So I shook his hand, and he smiled at me, and he says, "You don't believe me much, do you, young man?" And I said, "Sir, I'm the dishwasher. Come with me." Off to the ice cream parlor dining area, which is very large. And he says, I want you to look around. How many empty seats do you see?" "Well, sir, there's not any. I know that by the dirty dishes I'm getting."
Right.
"There's a line waiting to get in." And just at that moment, a young lady, a server, Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Over here we have Alex. Grabs Alex, puts him on a chair. Alex is looking around like this. And Alex came in today to celebrate his 9th birthday. On the beat of the drum, I want you to join with me. And they start to sing. Mr. Farrell whispers in my ear. He says, what kind of business we in, Dave? I said, well, sir, we're in the ice cream business. Look at Alex. Look at his parents, his grandparents, his siblings. Look how proud he is. What kind of business we in? I said, sir, are we in the memory business? And he says, that's right. Now he took, come with me back to the dish room. He grabbed a plate and said, see this dried lettuce? See this glass and that smear of lipstick? What happens if this plate and that glass gets in front of Alex's family? I said, well, they're going to have a bad memory. That's right. You're the one who protects the memory. And he looked over at the store manager. And I realized at that time, this lesson just wasn't for me. He was teaching the manager, how come you didn't onboard David correctly? And then he said to me, I'll see you tomorrow's meeting. Now that is what where change happened. 7:30, be there. I look forward to talking to you. 7:30 came. I sat at the back and he stood up and he said, okay, everybody stand up. We stood up and he says, okay, share with me the Farrell's purpose theme statement. Say it loud, say it proud. We look at each other. What is that?
Yeah,
right. He looked over at the manager again and just didn't do anything to cause him discomfort other than just to look. Is this okay? I'll lead us. Farrell's features fabulous food and fantastic fountain fantasies for frolicking, fun-filled, festive families. Then he goes to an easel and he moves the page over and says, now say it with me. We say it. Say it louder. We say it. Say it with enthusiasm. We say it. Then he quietly says, we will never open this restaurant again without getting into a circle and chatting that. Because people come here to celebrate. They're coming with a smile. They must leave with a smile. And they must leave with a little dose of happy-itis. Whoa.
Happy-itis.
This guy, he knew how to use the subconscious to seed the vision of what he wanted, because the subconscious would create the result of what's being seeded into it. What a master. Everybody left the meeting. I want to be the last one. I didn't want to be looking like a brown noser. So I waited till everybody was gone. And two, I was a proud, tough Latino kid.
Sure.
And there's nobody but him and me. I said, sir, can I ask you a question? He says, yes, young man. What is it? What does it feel like to know what you want? He said, I'm going to tell you something, young man. It's fabulous, because nothing starts until you know what you want. Hold on. I'm going to get you something. I'll be right back.
Because you didn't know at that time what you wanted, right?
I had no idea.
You had no idea.
I was lost. Mm-hmm. He came back. He handed me a book. He said, you read this book 3 times and you highlight everything that you don't understand or has a meaning to you. I visit this property every 2 months. And if you do that and you do your work, I'll carve out an hour every trip and spend it with you. I'll become your mentor.
Yeah, you became your
mentor. The book was Think and Grow Rich by Dr. Napoleon Hill. And I've been reading it ever since. And I'm a disciple of this work. Yeah. And I'm the largest seminar licensee of the Think and Grow Rich Institute in the world.
Yep.
Today. So from that dishwasher, I learned how success happened, and 10 years later, I was the youngest franchisee ever at 28 for a Farrell's Ice Cream Parlor restaurant, and moved back to Salt Lake City with a little different attitude.
That's incredible. Incredible how one moment, one stitch of fabric in time, just that one little decision, because you could have gotten a job at a car wash. You could have gotten a job at a burger joint. You could have chose to not get a second job and asked someone else for the money or move somewhere else. That moment in time, was that really your first awareness of manifestation, and that you sort of had a vision that, okay, if I if I really focus on something and figure out what it is that I want, it can take me somewhere.
You know, you look at Think and Grow Rich, the title of the book, you know, control the way you think and grow rich in the categories of your choice, family, faith, community, health, or wealth. The fact of the matter, what I learned was later, which I put in my book, Stop Drifting, mm-hmm. is the brain model. Understanding how we use thought to get us where we don't want to be. Mm-hmm. Understanding that, you can become an expert quickly. And then the idea is take the part, you know, there's the 80% of the brain that is the subconscious. Its only job is to receive the seeding thoughts from the conscious and then to find a way to make it so good or bad. The 15% of the conscious is the driver of everything that we do, the conscious, to make it so. But on top, the 5% of the imagination that grabs onto emotions, thought, and seeds them through the conscious into the subconscious and makes it so. So becoming the switch master of your own thought and pivoting to a positive state of mind, because you're going to be in a negative state of mind or a positive state of mind, that is the rule book of the game of life. And once you understand it, when I give a seminar and I explain, let me share with you in less than 5 minutes how you got where you are and don't want to be. And the fact of the matter is, I'm going to show you, you are already an expert in using the brain model to achieve. The only thing you're not an expert on is controlling the thought that you're seeding into it. Mm-hmm. And once we're able to identify that, hey, I was speaking at a prison, and when did you first think of committing this crime? It's always like no longer than 6 weeks before. Mm-hmm. You had the thought, what did it look like? Okay, it got seated in the subconscious, and then it looked for the opportunity. What was your opportunity? Oh, now you get it. So all you needed to do is, if you change the thought to a positive state of mind thought instead of a negative state of mind thought, you're already an expert.
Yeah, absolutely. And because it's so, I think for a lot of people, it's so, I hate to say it, but it's almost natural for you to just gravitate to the negative, you know, at first instance. And I see that with a lot of my clients and a lot of my patients. It's just, it's, you know, they'll come to me and I'll say, well, I can't do this and I don't have this. And I do that. Okay, well, let's look at that. You know, what, you know, all I've heard is negative, 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 but what do we have? What can we do? Where can we go? What are the resources we have available to us? Because it's not always necessarily, you know, a lack of resources, but a lack of resourcefulness. Right.
You are 100% right, which causes me to think, you know, whenever I'm an associate knows that it is taboo in our culture to start a statement with but. You can't, but you have to understand, you know, or anybody that wants to articulate in our city, you know, we have a homeless issue that is tragic. And when you hear a politician but you have to understand 10% of the police forces across the country are because of COVID, or you have to understand that is a failed leader, because a leader looks at the resources available and how can I in a creative way develop the excitement from the folks that deliver. A police officer wants to be a police officer to serve and protect, regardless of the 2% you may hear that does something that would ask you, how did they ever become a police officer? The majority of our police officers want to protect and serve. So it's the leadership that prevents it. And we have people in leadership that just don't have the talent to be there, because they're making their thoughts through the negative part, which is saying, I've got to defend why we're going to stay in this bad place, instead of, you know, the one quote I try to every day, I have this in my mind. Some people see things as they are and say, why? Woe is me. Others dream dreams that never were and say, why not? Why not me? Mm-hmm. I want us to be the second, not the first, because your thought is it going to determine your action, and your action creates the end result.
Absolutely. And there's so many people that have been in similar situations that you were in growing up, right? And sure. And what do you think the propensity to be negative versus positive had to do with your situation as opposed to someone else's situation? You know, you're lucky enough to have a mentor, you're lucky enough to have that self-awareness to say, okay, this is not the road I want to go down. But there's so many people that were in your similar situation that didn't choose the same route as you did. Well, and so where do you think that came from with you?
I believe it came from a father who came to this country at 15 years old by himself. Imagine what you were doing at 15. And at 15 to select that you're leaving your small village in Oaxaca, Mexico, coming to a place you've never seen, the United States, to pick fruit in Spanish Fork, Utah. That's courage.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, my father taught me a lot of things, the pride of to work. My father taught me how to live, but he also taught me the grace of how to leave this life. Mm. And to spend the last day with him, talk, laugh, and then say, okay, Dave, it's time. I'm ready. Shut off the machine. I'm going to be okay. Don't you cry. And Dave, don't miss work today. Your work's important. Mm. I'm going to be okay. I've got to hurry because I got a lot of things to do. What?
Wow.
My heavens. I had, like, who teaches you that?
What an incredible gift to have those moments with him.
Yeah. So, that's... you know, sometimes I think it's all about us ready to receive the nudge, that hunch, to not go away from it. Because, you know, when we think of something positive, Dr. Doubt whispers, sure. You can't do that. What were you thinking? And then on the other side, you know, I think there's on a positive side, if you really have a purpose and you've done your actions and you're lost, you can ask for guidance and it'll either come from the creator through your subconscious.
Yeah.
Or it comes from your reticular activating system with the knowledge that's already stuffed in your head. Either way you believe, it's available to us. If we use the most important three-letter word in the English language, what is that word? I will put you on the spot.
Oh my gosh, a three-letter word.
The most powerful three-letter word in the English language.
I'm at a loss. Please share.
A-S-K.
Ask.
Ask.
Yeah.
And it comes. Ask. And then be ready for the hunch. Be ready for the nudge.
Absolutely.
Dare to go in that direction.
Do you think that most people are afraid of going in that direction? Do you think that they just don't know what to do with what they have? I talked about this a little earlier in another conversation, and we talked about, you know, the fear of success. Some people have the ability for great success, and it's sometimes staring them right in the face, and they're afraid of success because it involves a lot of work and a lot of new experiences and a lot of other, you know, facets of communication, and, you know, it could feel very overwhelming. Do you think that's...
Well, I'd say it just a little different. I'd say that 3% of our society has been validated. They believe. They are the goal setters, scorekeepers. They wake up every morning to win. 10% can manage. They're the integrators of a vision, but then they wait to get a new direction. But 60% of our society just have been taught success isn't meant for you. They've been seeded to just get through the day, the week, then retire, and then you'll be happy. But nobody told them you're only going to live 6 more years.
So it's really, been implanted in them. It's been set as a foundation that they weren't to succeed.
And then 27% of our society are so negative, so angry, that they are just yelling and screaming. And we're seeing that on both sides of our political spectrum today. There is nothing but noise and screaming. We're not working. So we are seated. We are our GPS life directional system we received at birth for 87% of us is to drift. For 13% of us, it's to non-drift. Goal setter is a scorekeeper. So can we change it? Yes, but they need your help. They need my help. And they need to know, what is the rule book? Well, how does the brain work? They need to build new habits. And a habit can't be changed in a day, a week. It takes hundreds of days of doing it with the belief there is something in it for you. And when you do it hundreds of days, then you're in the rhythm of success. But more importantly, you've created a new habit of success.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's that habit, that continual, that consistency, that becoming acclimated to a new way of doing things. Yeah.
But you got to start with first believing. I believe that this can work. I got to have faith-based actions. I believe that action will create this result that I've never seen before. But you know what? They believe in you. They believe in me. They believe in the stories we shared. And we got to get more people sharing their story so that they say, gal, if David Ibarra can do it, well, then so can you.
Yeah. I want to talk about your book in a few seconds, but I also want to, you know, because a lot of people listen to the podcast and watch the show, and I'm a believer, I'm a Christian, so I understand that having that belief and that faith foundation. But for those who are listening or watching, who may say, oh, I don't know if that, you know, that faith and belief stuff is for me, or I don't know if that religious stuff is for me, or whatever. How would you put that in a way? To speak to those people, how would you encourage them to believe in a way that they might not necessarily be attuned to?
Yeah, the first thing that I'm going to say is that you know, whether you believe in the creator, infinite intelligence or not, believe in intelligence because you are intelligent. Yeah. We have the ability to control our thoughts. So we're going to get the answer to our question, and it's either going to come through science, the reticular activating system that processes everything that comes into your brain at about 2,000 thoughts per second. You can only process about 120. So the reticular activating system stores them, but it's there. So if you want to believe in science, the reticular activating system will deliver it. I happen to believe in a creator. And so if I know that there's the rule of the game of life is there is an adversary, and there is a creator. Dr. Doubt whispers to the 87%, keeping them frozen, making them become non-believers in themselves. Now, he comes to you uninvited. Now, if you have a purpose, which we can help people gain, and you've done your work, which we can help people understand the process to do that, the answer can be received if you ask. The creator must be invited, and then he'll come through your subconscious with an intelligent answer. And if you don't believe me, put a notepad next to your bed with a pen, and when you get it, wake up, write it down. In the morning, you won't remember, but you'll read it and you'll say, oh my heavens, that is intelligent. It's so intelligent, some of the stuff that I know, it did not come from me. I'm not that smart. But it's available if we know how to ask. So whether you're a Christian and believe in an infinite intelligence or a believer of infinite intelligence, or whether you're based from science, either way, reticular activating system or infinite intelligence, it's there for you. So I would suggest you learn the process to deliver the ask. In a way, you'll receive the answer.
And if you believe in nothing else, believe in yourself.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that. Now you talk about stopping the drift, and I know you've written a book. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that and where you got the idea to decide that you were going to write this book and how it all played out for you.
Sure, I got to grab this
book. Yeah.
Drifting. You know, I've got this thing. Mr. Farrell, when he gave me the gift, he told me there would be a payback. And he would tell me when, and he told me that when I became a disciple of Dr. Hill's work, he would tell me what I owed him. And what I owed him was something called time tithing, that I had to meet, that somebody was going to come knocking on that door, and it was going to be inconvenient for me, but I had to look at treating inconvenient by closing my eyes and imagine myself embracing it. Mm. Now, I may not be able to, that person took courage to knock on my door and to ask me for for help. Mm. And so while I cannot help right then, I can schedule it. And I schedule it. So I've done, and so I had to give my time. And for that, I can't receive any benefit personally.
Right.
I can't receive any money. This has to be for folks that can't afford a performance coach. Now, I coach all over the world with big companies. Mm-hmm. I know I've got a skill, but you got to give it to the folks that can't pay. And I've done over 1,000 of these sessions in helping people. Now, I've also started the Ybarra Foundation and put over 105 youngsters, Latino youngsters like me, mm-hmm. through college.
That's incredible.
I thought I wanted to share my stories professionally of working in companies because certain things happen all the time the same way. And yeah. I decided to put it into a fiction story to tell it in an entertaining way in about 120 pages. And so that's what I did. This is sharing what I learned. And that way I could take my promise to Mr. Farrell, mm-hmm. of sharing this lesson with thousands and thousands instead of hundreds and hundreds. So I wrote a book. Yeah. I accept speaking wherever I'm invited. Sure. When it's a corporate speech, I charge not a little bit, quite a bit. Right. But when it's a college, hey, I don't care, mm-hmm. if it's 10 students or it's 6,000. Yeah. I'm going to share this message. And the message is, understand it. It all starts by starting with a positive state of mind. Learn how to create it. Second, find a purpose, just a little purpose to get started. And then in your journey, hunt for your big idea that just makes you excited. Attach it to your purpose and then be able to articulate it in a theme, mm-hmm. that every associate that works with you understands and every guest that receives the services gets that feeling that you wanted them to feel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's important for people to know too, that you know, believing and manifesting and putting in the hard work is not going to be, you know, all easy and stress-free, and there's going to be no bumps in the road. And, you know, because I think at some point we go forward and we think, okay, this is going to be great. I'm going to believe, I'm going to manifest, I'm going to do all this stuff. And then we hit a snag or we hit a bump in the road and we go, well, this doesn't work. Well, I'm not going to do this. We get discouraged, right? So how do you overcome that discouragement? What is the thought process in staying positive through all of that, saying, well, you know, okay, I'm not going to give up.
Yep.
You know, I'm going to keep going.
One is I'm the switch master of my own thought, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But the first thing is whenever I have a new initiative or I have a team member or my sons, have something, I want them, and they've heard me constantly say, it is important to control your enthusiasm. Control, be enthusiastic, controlled enthusiasm, because nothing happens until an action is put into motion, followed by another one and another one and another one, until you achieve the rhythm of success and then can maintain it through a habit. It is not easy, but it sure is enjoyable. Then you've got to control the uninvited whispers of Dr. Doubt, the adversary.
Right.
He's coming after you because you chose something positive. And his mission is to keep you negative. So when that happens, close your eyes and immediately envision the three most fun things that happened to you in your life. To me, it's the birth of my son. To me, it's the book club I belong to and the things you can go, the places you can travel. To me, it's a sporting event, victory. And when I'm seeing it, I just pivoted to a positive state of mind and the door to the negative nut house just opened. Yeah. All I got to do is walk through it and shut the door. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to do that throughout the entire day until one day my prominent thought is positive. A positive state of mind. Now
automatic.
I've reset the GPS system of life thought for me. and I'm going to act like a 3% natural that I'm not.
Absolutely. I love that. And I love what you said about adversaries. I just did a post a little while ago, and I said, you know, along your life, there will be adversaries, not for what you have and where you are, but because of the opportunities made available to you for where you're going.
Well, I would debate you on that. I think the adversaries come precisely for who you are and what you have. Mm. And many of them will be your own family members. You have to protect yourself against jealousy and envy, because that's part of the work of the adversary. Those emotions he can use to block you and make you feel alone. I feel sorry for some of my relatives that frankly want to talk about me. Oh, David thinks he's a celebrity. David's on the day. David wears this. David drives that. David. Oh, he thinks he's a big shot. I'm so sorry for them, because I want to share with everybody, how do you get the opportunity to get what you want? And how do you define what rich is to you? Family, faith, community, health, and wealth. And once you define that, you've got your combination to the lock that prevents you from winning the game of life.
Yeah. And I would even argue it's in your, you know, in your friend circle and the people you surround yourself with. I have definitely experienced that in my own life. And, you know, I've had moments in my own life where, you know, we've all started on the same playing field and we're all enthusiastic and we're all excited to start something new. And, you know, one of us gets ahead in some aspect, and one of us gets ahead in another. And then you slowly start to see, you know, the loyalties and the who's really happy for you and who's really, you know, and it's, you know, it's kind of it's almost a shame, but it's almost a blessing as well too, because you know, you surround yourself with the people who want to support you and who have your best intentions at heart, and you want to give that to them as well too. You know,
but you can identify a winner or a loser just based on who they hang around with and what they read, or if they read.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So now you were really lucky to have a mentor in your life, and now you mentor a lot of folks.
Yes.
And I wonder if there is a difference for you in your experience, if there's a difference in manifesting and in positive thinking and in planning in a personal aspect as opposed to a business aspect, and do they interconnect, do you find, or do you keep them separate?
Well, I'll tell you what, some people say business isn't personal. Baloney. Yeah. It is too personal. Everything that you love is personal. So they're intertwined. The ability to keep balance in the different categories of your life, family, faith, community, health, and wealth. You know, I've never achieved balance in all five, but I've got balance in three, and I'm not done yet. But being able to seed your subconscious to have a good day, week, I developed, and I share it in Stop Drifting, available on Amazon.com.
Absolutely.
Developed something called the readiness exercise.
Okay.
And when I take a shower in the morning, I have a shower speaker, and I turn on a novel or whether it's a Think and Grow Rich, Dr. Hill, I listen to often. So I'm listening to it while I'm showering. Mm-hmm. So now I'm receiving.
Priming yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Then I get out and I have my iPad on my counter, and I look at my business purpose themes, and I read them out loud, just like Ferrell's Features, Fabulous Food and Fitness. I read them out loud. I read my purpose short term, long term. I read it out loud. I go to my standards, where I have 14 standards of measurements for being a CEO of our seven companies. And then I read my daily actions that I put that are both personal and work related, that are the actions that need to be put in motion for me to have the effect on being the leader of our group. There's 44. I read them out loud. Then I flip to my calendar and I look and see, and I say, are you today? And frankly, it was the first time I looked. And then I asked Crystal, tell me more about this so I'll be prepared. Tell me more about what this program is about. Now I know what each individual expects of me. And my job is to deliver the expectation of the person that I'm seeing that day. Now, that readiness level, what is it? That is priming my subconscious with the thoughts for me to execute them with controlled enthusiasm, controlled attention, accurate thought in a creative way.
Yeah.
So it's a game, and I do it every morning.
Yeah, you set the foundation, you prime yourself, you set the foundation and you go out. And do you envision that every task that you set out for the day is accomplishable? Or do you have a certain degree of a room for error, let's just say, and how do you cope with that?
I can tell you I'm at 64.8% completion of the 44 tasks that I do daily actions. If I touch those actions, they'll never become an emergency action. And those are the actions that I put into motion. I have an expected return of what they'll yield. 61% from our studies, and the software that I use, I received a U.S. patent for executing the standards, and it's Napoleon Hill's principles into a deliverable system called a software program that if you put that around God's computer, man's computer, then I can operate like I'm a 3% natural non-drifter. Now, 61% says I'm not drifting. I like to achieve somewhere around 71 to 78. 78, I believe, is the best anyone can do.
Right. Why 78? Why not 79?
Well, 78 from our statistical data is shown, that's where you're just hitting all the cylinders. Right. Of course, we will open up the actions and make sure that there's never, ever one action that's always missed. If there is, in our software, we move it to the top. So we do the one that we've proven we don't like as much first.
Right. Right. You talked a little bit about balance, and we talk a lot about that at the clinic at Mindful Health, mindful-based balance, creating a balance. And I think there's a little bit of a misconception when people think balance, they think, okay, well, balance means equal. And that means I have to spend, if I spend 5 hours here, I have to spend 5 hours here. If I spend 10 hours at work, I got to spend 10 hours with my family. And that's not necessarily what creates a balance. And you touched a little bit on that about having balance in some areas of your life and maybe not so much in other areas. And I wonder how important that is for you as you go throughout life. And do you turn your attention to that as something that you want to achieve, in the near or the long term?
Well, let me just say this, is that to me, I divide my day into three parts. The one that I fell in most is sleep. I think that 8 hours of sleep is necessary for you to operate this vessel, operate that contains and holds your soul to operate efficiently and get you the most. I normally am operating with 4.5 to 5 hours sleep.
Yeah.
So that's the one that I fell in most. The second part, 8 hours, is work. And can you put the work and divide work into different categories? And so I'll put them into blocks of time, blocks to where I can get controlled attention. But where a life is really achieved is in the spare time, 8 hours, and then the block of time giving back, going the extra mile, that the boards I sit on, that I'm a specialized talent member, am I delivering? The 1 hour of meditation, the 2 hours of education, the 3 hours of building relationships, and that's in family and friends, and being present to a grandchild or a child, just being there without your phone. Those are the ways that you can line it out. Now, when I say that I'm failing, I always say I think that the one that I failed in the most was family. My children would argue that point that I'm nuts. Well, I was so busy wanting to get from poor to being able to provide for my family. Some people say, I won't do that to my family. And when it comes to what you're willing to do work-related to provide, and I correct them by saying, are you saying to your family or you're saying you won't do that for your family?
Right.
And so you know, my
therein
kids
lies
tell me,
the
hey, you were at every event, you were at every place. And man, we always know you're there for us. When it comes to community, I've always done well in giving back, whether it's my foundation or what have you. When it comes to faith, I probably am not as good as in that I don't practice going to a church on a Sunday. But when it comes to wealth, I'm good on that. When it comes to sound health, I'm really good on that. I have the same body fat content at under 6% that I had in high school.
That's
why?
Phenomenal. That's phenomenal.
This is my body. I go to an anti-aging clinic every 4 months. I get 50 million stem cells. For 28 years, I've been doing it. Why? I'm going to get the most out of this. And in February, I'll be 70 years old. And I don't feel 70.
You certainly don't look 70, sir. I have to tell you that. I think, I love that. I often say, I never say when I get older. I never say that. I always say, you know, when I do this 2 years from now, when I get younger, you know, as you get younger, this, and I think that kind of priming does something to you. I mean, I don't think a lot of people would really recognize my age if I told them, you know, I'm 41 and I don't look and feel that age at all. And I always say to myself, I'm anti-aging, you know.
Well, I would like to add this. There is no way I'm reducing my joy of work 1 hour a week until I reach 85 at least. I got 15 prime years. Mm. And when nature takes away something, she replaces it with something else.
Mm.
So when you begin to lose your youth, she replaces it with wisdom.
Mm.
There is, I would not want to be 5 years younger. I would not want to be 2 years younger. I would not want to be 10 years younger. Yeah. I am in good condition physically, and I have more wisdom than I ever had. And yeah. Some people will say, David, are you going to retire? And I said, are you kidding? Yeah. I worked my whole life to get to this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I'm not retiring. And now you said that, I can't hang around with you no more.
Yeah. And you give them a copy of your book.
Yes,
you touched on sleep, and this is just an aside question, because you say you average about 4 or 5 hours of sleep, and mm-hmm. and I just find this curious, and I wonder if you think, you know, I myself get about 2 to 4 hours, and I know a lot of, you know, Martha Stewart's famous for saying she gets 4 hours, and, you know, some presidents say they run on 4 hours. Do you think that that's just a quote-unquote habit of, you know, those who are high achievers?
I think no doubt that high achievers have more thought battle in their head. They're normally eclectic, and you know, because they'll be talking to you and all of a sudden in the middle of a sentence, the sentence ends with something else that had nothing to do with the beginning of the sentence, because they're managing multiple things at once. So when we go to retire for the evening, we haven't shut off the engines. So how I try to do it, and I do get, a couple of nights a week. I try real hard, and I'm not done trying to get over 6, because if I can ask myself a question and go to bed in peace, waiting to receive the answer, then I can use sleep in the most productive way.
Mm.
And our bodies do need time to rejuvenate their cell structure and the foundation of where we live. So we look Absolutely. At America, we're the most unhealthy people in the world, I think. Our medical system is horrible. Just look at the statistics. And
well, obesity is 48%?
Yes.
48%?
We need to take it upon ourselves to be healthy. Mm. So, you know, 11 o'clock last night, I was going to start, I'm writing my new book, Beyond Think and Grow Rich, the rule book to the game of life. And I was writing, and I said, oh, I hadn't hit the gym yet. Now I happen to stay in my office most of the time. Like right behind me is my living suite.
Okay.
I'm single. And so I have a gym downstairs. And so I have a condo just a block and a half away.
Yep.
But when I'm in the work mode, I'm working the entire day. When I'm in the play mode, I want to play the entire day. I want to relax. I'll work 6 weeks and then I'm taking a week and go anywhere I want in this world.
Yeah.
And you gotta, and you gotta believe in rejuvenating yourself. So at 11 o'clock last night, 11:15, I went downstairs to my gym and worked out for 45 minutes.
Good for
I'm
you.
I'm going to get my weight training in. I'm going to get my 45-minute walk. I'm going to eat clean every day. And sugar is poison, and so is alcohol because it's sugar. So that's the way I'm treating it.
Yes, I love that you said that. I love that. I think people don't invest enough in their nutrition. And especially I find for business men and women who are always on the go, it's so easy to just grab something quick, right? Grab fast food, grab fried this, fried that, sugar this, sugar that. And it really affects your mental capacity, your ability, your reaction time.
Well, this is this vessel, yours and mine, it is the mind body. It's one unit. It's the mind body. How the body feels is going to affect how your mind thinks. Mind thinks is going to affect how the body feels.
Absolutely.
Now, if something goes wrong with your body, your mind can compensate by if you have an accident, you become paralyzed, it can compensate. But if something goes wrong with the brain, your body cannot compensate. Mm-hmm. You've got to. You know, it's really interesting. You'll see some folks as they get older, they can't speak as quickly. They lose their, why is that? And that's because the small vessels within their brain become clogged with plaque. Mm-hmm. And so they're not getting the oxygen. So they're not thinking the same. I go through a process to have it removed through chelation. Now, I'm not going to get into
chelation. Yeah, that's another topic. So
another topic, but to have the body work the way that it was intended, so your brain, which isn't used to its full capacity, can operate in the same way it operated at age 30. I absolutely know that's doable, but most think that getting out of shape, getting obese, getting slow, well, that's just part of life. Well, no, it's part of your choice of life. It's not part of mine. It sounds like it's not part of yours. Absolutely.
Well, I have a background in clinical nutrition and quantum functional medicine. So I would love to talk about that with you another time and a different sure. space. But yes, I love that you brought up chelation and you know, stem cells and nutrition and eating healthy. I want to touch a little bit about on some of the other things that you do just quickly, sure. you know, just going from, you know, franchisee to now you have the e-leader tech business that you run, and all of your mentorship programs and your institute. How has cultivating these things changed your life?
Well,
what has it meant for you?
It's given my life purpose. Because everything that we do is to fulfill my personal purpose statement. And that is, I work with employed adults who oftentimes go to work suffocating in unhappiness, slowly committing spiritual suicide, to assist in conquering work so that they go home with pride of providing, releases them from the bondage so that they can be adding full attention with family, faith, community, and health. So anything that I do has to deliver on that life purpose statement of mine. So eLeader Tech is a performance management software company and with technology. I own a company, eLeader Tech Limitada in Costa Rica. I'll be leaving to go there tonight. We have 8 engineers to build all the software that we use. We have everything, the Ibarra, a business group is working with automobile dealerships on how is it that you develop talent, because it's not just capital. Yeah. The biggest asset is talent. When you put them together, you'll get a Disneyland-like result, a themed experience, and your market share will grow. And then the 4 Think and Grow Rich Institute licensees. I had licenses from South America or Central America, Mexico, China, and Singapore. We have a busy, but busy business.
Amazing.
Everybody supports each other.
Amazing. So
it's not in conflict. It just flows together.
Flows. And you recently just shot some video for Think and Grow Rich for film.
Yes, we're doing a movie. It's called Beyond Think and Grow Rich, The Power of Thought, we're interviewing nine of the biggest seminar directors, authors, Sharon Lecter from Rich Dad, Poor Dad. She wrote that and Outwitting the Devil and many, many more, to John Sartorius in Dubai, to Bob Proctor. We're going to have a very strong movie to share just the power of thought. And then I have the seminars that are written in the same fashion, and I'm writing the book that will be the companion to it.
I love that. I love that. We're almost out of time, and I want to thank you so much for joining me today, because I know your time is very valuable and I really appreciate it. I like to sort of end things off with asking a few rapid fire questions, if I could, and I'll just say some words and you just tell me what the first thing that comes to mind is. Hey. Family.
Joy.
Business.
Thriving.
Hard work.
The game of life.
People.
Love.
Communication.
Communication. Sharing ideas in a positive way.
Relationship.
Nothing more powerful than our personal relationships.
Manifestation.
Seed your subconscious to get you good things, become the switch master of your own thought, and pivot to positive.
And mindfulness.
Be kind.
I love that. And David, what do you know for sure?
I know for sure that tomorrow is going to be a better day than today. I know for sure that never give up, always have hope. And America hasn't seen the best of itself, but the founding documents, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, was never articulating what we were. It was articulating what we wanted to be. And it's time for us to get back on our journey to be what we could be.
I love that. I'm certainly inspired. I know you're an inspiration to a lot of people. Please share where people can find you, your social media, your book, all your links.
Well, davidribarra.com and stopdrifting.com will link you to all of our sites.
Everything. Okay. Thank you so much, David, for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure to talk with you, and we'll get this up and post. I know this is going to be a lot of valuable content for my audience and for anybody listening and watching. Thanks again, and I hope you have an amazing, amazing week.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for what you do in helping people control their destiny.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye now.
Yay!